Unit 8, Administration under Akbar. Page 21. Structure. 8.0, Objectives. 8.1, Introduction. 8.2, Central Administration. 8.2.1, Emperor, His Powers and Functions. 8.3, Council of Ministers. 8.3.1, Wakil or Wazir. 8.3.2, Imperial Diwan. 8.3.3, Mir Bakshi. 8.3.4, Chief Sadr. 8.3.5, Muhtasib. 8.3.6, Mir Saman. 8.3.7, Mir Atish or Darogai Topkhana. 8.3.8, Darogai Dak Chowki. 8.4, Provincial Administration, Subhas. 8.4.1, Subedar. 8.4.2, Diwan. 8.4.3, Bakshi. 8.4.4, Sadar. 8.4.5, Vakaya Navis. 8.4.6, Amil. 8.4.7, Faujdar. 8.4.8, Kotwal. 8.5, Local Administration or Sarkars. Page 22. 8.5.1, Chief Shikdar or Faujdar. 8.5.2, Amal Gujar. 8.5.3, Bitikchi. 8.5.4, Khazandar. 8.6, Local Parganas or Tehsils Administration. Continued. 8.7, Land Revenue Administration. 8.7.1, First Experiment. 8.7.2, Second Experiment. 8.7.3, Third Experiment. 8.7.4, Fourth Experiment. 8.7.5, Fifth and Last Experiment. 8.7.6, Raja Todarmal's Land Revenue System, Zapti System. 8.8, Imperial Army. 8.8.1, Infantry. 8.8.2, Cavalry. 8.8.3, Elephants Corps. 8.8.4, Artillery. 8.8.5, Mansabdari System. 8.9, Judicial Administration. 8.10, Let us sum up. 8.11, Self-assessment questions. 8.12, Books for further study. Page 23. 8.0, Objectives. By studying this unit, you are going to understand about salient features of Akbar's administration, main features of central government, Akbar's interest in introducing reforms in all branches of administration, functions of various ministers of central government, main features of provincial administration, various officers of the provincial government, officers who worked in the various departments of local self-government, village administration, various experiments made by Akbar in the revenue administration, Raja Todarmal's land revenue administration called Zapti system or Dahasal, duties of revenue officers, reforms introduced in the army, introduction of Mansabdari, main features of Mansabdari system, various reforms of judicial administration. 8.1, Introduction. Akbar was not only a great conqueror but also an accomplished administrator. He provided an excellent system of administration. He was the real founder of the Mughal system of government and administration in India. No doubt that the administrative system of Akbar was largely based upon the principles and institutions introduced by Sher Shah Suri. Yet, Akbar introduced many changes in the system to make it more effective. It may be mentioned that Babur and Humayun were very much preoccupied with their political struggle and they could not pay attention to the administration of the country. It was Akbar who set up a system of administration which was carried on by his successors without much changes. Page 24. Therefore, Akbar has been regarded as the founding father of the Mughal administrative system. Akbar's theory of state was revolutionary in its contents and scope. It stood for a secular state as opposed to the Islamic state of the Muslim conception. 8.2. Central Administration. 8.2.1. Emperor, His Powers and Functions. The Mughal administration was highly centralized. All civil and military powers of the state was concentrated in his hand. He was the supreme commander of the imperial forces and fountainhead of justice. His word was law. Though the emperor was assisted by a number of ministers in the administration, he was not bound by their advice. The final decision rested with the emperor. In short, he enjoyed absolute authority and there was hardly any check on his authority. 8.3 Council of Ministers. Past and flourishing Mughal Empire needed a very elaborate administrative machinery to keep it going. Akbar was assisted by a council of ministers in the discharge of his duties. The ministers were appointed by him and could be dismissed by him at any time. The ministers did not hold office for any fixed term. The principle of collective responsibility also did not exist. The various ministers discussed the matters pertaining to their departments separately with the emperor. 8.3.1 Vakil or Wazir. The Prime Minister of the Mughals was variously known as Vakil or Wazir. He was the right-hand man of the emperor who acted as his chief advisor and was supposed to exercise powers of supervision and control over the entire administrative establishment. It may be mentioned clearly at this juncture, it was only Bairam Khan who enjoyed all the powers as Prime Minister during the days of Akbar's minority. But when Akbar himself assumed the reins of the government, Akbar played a game of politics against his own prime ministers. Akbar frequently changed his prime ministers. Sometimes he did not fill the vacancy for many years and acted as his own prime minister. When the office of the Vakil was ultimately revived, Akbar did not give him the powers of supervision over the imperial finance. All these curbs on the powers and functions of Vakil reduced him to the position of just one of the ministers. Under Jahangir, the imperial Diwan, originally second in the ministerial hierarchy, next to the Vakil, rose into prominence. When Shah Jahan came to power, the office of Vakil completely lost its significance. Thus, office of Vakil was abolished and the imperial Diwan came to be known as Wazir-e-Azam. Page 25. 8.3.2 The Imperial Diwan. The Diwan-e-Ala or the Finance Minister was the second most important minister of the Mughals up to the time of Jahangir. He was in charge of revenue and expenditure of the state. The Imperial Diwan formulated the fiscal policy of the state. He fixed the state's share, appointed tax collectors, and exercised complete control over the imperial treasury. The allocation of grants for various departments were made by him. The provincial diwans were appointed by the emperor on the advice and were put under his strict supervision and control. All payments from the treasury needed his approval. The imperial diwan maintained direct contacts with the provincial governors as well as with the diwans. He reported all financial transactions to the emperor. Thus, he acted as a link, like the Vakil, between the emperor and the other officers of the state. All appointment orders, transfers and promotions were issued from his office. The imperial diwan was assisted by about half a dozen diwans and other high dignitaries to cope with the heavy work. These officers were Diwan-e-Khalsa, or the officer in charge of the Khalsas, and the Diwan-e-Jagir, or the officer in charge of land assignments. The Diwan-e-Bayutut, who looked after Karkhana or workshops. Sahib-e-Tauji was in charge of military accounts, while the treasury chief was called the Mushrif-e-Khazana Mir Bakshi. 8.3.3 Mir Bakshi. Mir Bakshi was another important minister who enjoyed a position next only to the Imperial Diwan. He was a minister in charge of military establishment. After the introduction of Mansabas system, most of the government officers were placed on the payrolls of the army so that Mir Bakshi partially became the paymaster general of the empire as well. He maintained complete service record of the government officers under the Mansabdari system, prepared their salary bills and forwarded them to the Diwan, that is the finance department, for payment. All Mansabdars were appointed by his office. He introduced prospective candidates to the emperor to appoint as Mansabdars. By virtue of his office, he kept himself in touch with all Mansabdars. He posted the armies in various parts of the empire, effected the transfers of the Mansabdars. Though he was not the commander-in-chief of the forces, he arranged the dispatch of military expeditions. He also provided the means of communication and transport to the armies on the move. He employed news agents and spies in various parts of the empire to collect information on war fronts. Mir Bakshi posted the royal guards, who were changed very often, sometimes daily. All the prominent mansabdars had to perform his duty by turn. He also looked after the comforts of the emperor during the course of his tours and royal hunts. In other words, Mir Bakshi acted as his most important confidential advisor on military affairs and carefully watched internal and external dangers to the empire. Like the imperial Diwan, he had also many deputies called Bakshis who assisted him in his duties. Page 26. 8.3.4. The Chief Sadar. Another important minister was called Sadar-e-Sadur or Sadar-e-Jahan. He was in charge of ecclesiastical affairs and religious endowments. He performed three important duties. He was the chief religious advisor, exercised control over and disbursed religious charities, and acted as the chief justice of the state. He regulated the religious policy of the state and made sure that the king governed according to law. He regarded himself as the chief representative of the ulama and safeguarded their interests. Ulama wielded great influence in state politics. In his capacity as chief justice, the Sadar constituted the second highest judicial setup of the state. Akbar soon realized that Sadar was his rival in exercising powers. Supported by the orthodox Sunni ulama, Sadar asserted his authority within the sphere of his jurisdiction and control. He did not care for the emperor in discharging his functions. Akbar was not satisfied with the behavior of Sadar. It was not conducive to the welfare of his subjects. Therefore, Akbar decided to curtail the powers of Chief Sadar. Akbar had rejected the Islamic theory of state. Akbar made inquiries regarding the working of the judicial department. He was shocked to hear the corrupt practices of former Sadars and his subordinates. Akbar took drastic steps against the corrupt officials. All those Sayurghals, that is land grants, which were held by undeserving hands were resumed and size of the others were reduced considerably. Abdun Nabi, the chief Sadar, was dismissed from service. Another person was appointed as chief Sadar. The new Sadar was given the right to grant only 15 bighas of land as rent-free grant to anyone. Akbar nationalized the office of the Sadar as well as his establishment by throwing open the benefits of the state to all its subjects, including the Hindus. The appointment of provincial Sadars under the new administrative setup led to the decentralization of many powers and functions of the imperial Sadar. 8.3.5. Muhtasib. Mutasib combined both secular as well as religious duties. He was originally required to see that the people conformed to the traditions of Islam in their daily lives. Under Akbar, his functions were only secularized. Now he was asked to raise the moral standard of the society. Mutasib kept an eye on gamblers, drunkards and other antisocial elements and brought them to book. In other words, he tried to protect the interests of Islam and ensured the observance of the tenets of faith. He also propagated moral principles among the people. 8.3.6. Mir Saman. Mir Saman was in charge of the royal household, including the harem, royal kitchen, imperial guards, and the state-owned karkhanas. During the reign of Akbar, he worked in subordination to the imperial Diwan, but Jahangir accorded him the status equal to that of other imperial ministers. Page 27. He was in charge of the artillery of the emperor. It was an important office and was mostly assigned to a Turk or a Persian. 8.3.8. Daroga-e-Dak-Chowki. He was in charge of postal department and was responsible for the carriage of news from various parts without any delay. These news were carried on horseback to different parts at the quickest possible speed. He had to keep the emperor informed about every important affair within the empire. In addition to the above officials, Akbar also engaged certain other officials in the conduct of his administration. These officials included Mustufi, Auditor General, and Mustrif, Chief Admiral, Mir Bar, Superintendent of Forests, Mir Arz, Officer in Charge of Petition, etc. but the final authority rested with the king. In short, Mughal administration under Akbar was highly centralized. 8.4. Provincial administration. Subhas. Akbar had introduced a highly centralized administrative machinery. For the sake of administrative convenience, the empire was divided into 15 provinces called Subhas. The credit of establishing an uniform provincial administration throughout the empire goes to Akbar. Sher Shah had earlier introduced many reforms relating to provincial and local governments. He was the forerunner of Akbar in the field of administration. Akbar followed the example of Sher Shah in the formulation of his state policy. He recognized his empire into well-defined provinces and introduced uniform administration there. In addition to these provinces, a number of vassal states also existed. They enjoyed a certain degree of autonomy. The vassal chiefs were enrolled as mansabdars and had to be in attendance upon the emperor on important occasions. 8.4.1 Subedar. The provinces which were under the direct control of the central government were called as Subhas. These Subhas' administration were the replica of the imperial government. Each Subha was comprised of a governor, Diwan, Bakshi, Sadar, Qazi and other officers. The governor was called by different names such as Nizam, Subedar or Sipahasalar. He was the chief executive of the province who held his court at the provincial capital. Each province had a uniform pattern of government. The Nizam, popularly called as Subedar, was appointed by the emperor. He possessed both the military and civil powers of the province. He was not only the head of civil administration, but also the commander of the provincial army. He also exercised judicial powers. He recruited an adequate police force for maintaining law and order in the province. Page 28. He was in charge of all imperial arms stationed within his territories. It was also his duty to suppress the internal revolts in his jurisdiction. The Subedar assisted the provincial Diwan and his revenue staff in the collection and safe custody of the revenue. The Subedar's court constituted the highest court of appeal in criminal cases within the province. He also enjoyed the power of hearing appeals against the decisions of the local Qazis and Amils. On behalf of the emperor, he undertook public welfare activities also. He constructed sarais, hospitals, schools and charity houses. He took measures to improve the means of communication and transport. It was also the duty of Subedar to collect tribute from the vassal states put under his charge. The provincial governors were usually transferred from one province to another after every 3 or 4 years. It was felt if they were allowed to continue, they might develop the tendency of revolt. 8.4.2 Diwan. The provincial Diwan, like the Subedar, was also an officer appointed by the imperial government. He looked after the collection of revenues and expenditure of the province. His functions and duties were similar to those of imperial Diwan. However, the provincial Diwan was not a subordinate to the Subedar. Sometimes he was even above the Subedar in his rank and status as Mansabdar. The existence of two powerful officers often resulted in friction between the two in exercising their powers. Indirectly, it was helpful to the imperial government to maintain the balance of power in provinces. It was because the Subedar and the Diwan kept a strict watch on each other. Both of them reported lapses of each other to the central government. 8.4.3 Bakshi. Bakshi in the province was appointed by the central government on the recommendation of Mir Bakshi. He worked under the Subedar. He was in charge of military establishment of the province. He maintained the muster roll of soldiers and disbursed salaries to them. The construction and maintenance of the forts was one of his special assignments. Always, Bakshi carried out the orders of Subedar. Bakshi also sent reports of military intelligence to Mir Bakshi at the center. 8.4.4 Sadar. It was Akbar who appointed the office of Sadar in the province. The provincial Sadar was appointed by the emperor on the recommendation of the imperial Sadar. He disbursed royal charities and patronized education and learning on secular lines. He awarded land grants, scholarships and stipends to the scholars, professional artists, saints and other deserving persons. Sadar acted as chief Qazi and heard appeals against their decisions. The appeals against the judgment of Qazi were made to the Subedar. Page 29, 8.4.5. Vakaya Navis. In every province, a Vakaya Navis was appointed. He posted new writers and spies all over the province. He usually submitted his reports to the governor. But he enjoyed the power of submitting problems of more serious nature directly to the central government. Sometimes the provincial Bakshi acted as Vakaya Navis also. 8.4.6. Amil. The Amil was basically a revenue collection officer, although he performed certain other duties as well. He looked after the agricultural lands and made efforts to convert the barren land to cultivable one. 8.4.7. Faujdar. Faujdars assisted the Subedar in the maintenance of peace and other duties. Each Faujdar was in charge of a division of the province and was responsible for maintenance of order and suppression of revolts. 8.4.8. Kotwal. The Kotwal was the most important local official. Though he was primarily a police officer, he also performed certain judicial functions. His duties included inspection of prisoners, safety of roads, regulation of markets, inspection of weights and measures. He was also expected to keep an eye on visitors and foreigners coming to his territory. The provincial capital and some other big towns were held under the charge of Kotwals. They were appointed by the governor and were answerable to him for their performance. He recruited about 200 or 300 policemen, a sort of local militia, to establish law and order in the town. In his capacity as the municipal commissioner, he made lighting and scavenging arrangement. He appointed night watchmen and safeguarded the life and property of the inhabitants. Kotwal was, in fact, the most dreaded government official during the Mughal period, whose very appearance in a public place at the head of a dozen horsemen or foot soldiers was enough to make the people tremble with fear. From the above account, it is clear that Akbar provided a very efficient provincial administration and was able to exercise sufficient control over subedars. But due to pressure of work, the king was not always able to devote sufficient time to provincial administration. Therefore, he found it very difficult to check corruption and atrocities in provinces. Page 30, 8.5. Local administration or sarkars. Akbar inherited an excellent system of local administration from Sher Shah, but the local administration deteriorated after the death of Sher Shah. Akbar revived the system and made it more effective. A subha or province was divided into a number of sarkars or districts, and each district in turn was parcelled out into paragans or tehsils. A district was governed by a senior sikdar or sikdari shikdaran or faujdar. 8.5.1. The chief sikdar. The chief sikdar, commonly known as faujdar, was primarily a military officer who administered the district with the help of a small contingent of troops. The faujdar was appointed by the king, although he worked under the supervision of the subedar. His main duties included maintenance of law and order. He maintained roads and kept them safe for travel and enforced imperial regulations. He assisted the revenue staff in the collection of land revenue and other taxes. Subedar paid surprise visits to the district headquarters to inspect their work and also deputed spies to keep an eye on the activities. The Faujdar also performed the duties of an Amil at the district level. In this regard, he worked under the direct supervision of the Diwan. He maintained direct contacts with the peasants and helped them in every possible manner to increase their production. He sent a report regarding the measurement of land to the Diwan. He also informed about prices of food grains and activities of zamindars. 8.5.2. Amalguzar. The second principal officer in the district was Amalguzar. He was the head of the revenue department. Under him, there were many revenue collectors who were nicknamed as Crores. The Amalguzar submitted periodical reports of income and expenditure of the district to the provincial Diwan and took positive steps to increase the government income. 8.5.3. Bitikchi. Bitikchi was the office superintendent and record keeper of the land revenue establishments of the district. These records contained settlement reports, deeds of proprietorship of land, the nature and extent of crops grown by the peasants, and the amount of land revenue payable by them to the state in cash or kind. 8.5.4. Page 31. He worked under the supervision of Amal Guzar. He maintained the service records of the revenue officials, including tax collectors, inspectors, kunangos and patwaris, and dispersed salaries to them. 8.5.4. Khazandar. The Khazandar was the treasury officer of the district who worked under the orders of Amal Guzar. Both Amal Guzar and Khazandar were collectively responsible for the safe custody of the royal treasure. 8.6. Local administration. Parganas and Tehsils. Each Sarkar or district constituted of a few Parganas or Tehsils. There were 4 to 5 Parganas in each Sarkar. Each Pargana was administered by a batch of subordinate officials on the patterns of district administration. In each Pargana, there was a Sikdar, Amil, Fotadar and Kunango. The Sikdar was the chief executive officer of the Tehsil. His duties were the same as those of Faujdar. He enforced imperial orders at the Tehsil level. He maintained law and order and helped the revenue officials in the collection of land revenue and other taxes. The Amil acted as judicial officer in revenue and civil disputes. He enjoyed many discretionary powers in settling many cases. He played a major role in enhancing the prestige of the authorities by establishing harmonious relationships between the rulers and the ruled. The officer in charge of Tehsil treasury was called Fotadar. The Kunango was head of Patwaris, who as field officers constituted the very backbone of the land revenue establishment of the Mughals. The Kunango kept a complete record of the land and produce of land. He kept registers of the village, tenure, extent and transfer of lands. The important position of Kunango was recognized by the manual which observed, "The emperor's business goes on in relevance on your papers. To your office belong the papers of division, comparison, etc. Keep 2 copies of the record, one in your house and the other in your office, in the charge of your gumastha, so that at least one may be saved in case of fire or flood." The village was the lowest unit of administration under Akbar. It enjoyed complete autonomy. People managed their affairs in villages without much interference from the government. The village administration was carried on by the village council called Panchayat. The village council was headed by an elected sarpanch. He collected the revenues from the peasants of the village and deposited the same with the treasury. If he failed to perform this duty, he could be held responsible by the government. He received 2.5% of the total collection as his fee. The sarpanch was assisted by 2 officials known as Patwari and village accountant. The village panchayats also provided certain services like irrigation, education, etc. The village panchayat maintained law and order within its jurisdictions and made necessary arrangements for celebrations of various festivals. Page 32. The panchayat also enjoyed certain judicial powers. It decided all minor disputes without any interference from above. Even foreign travelers have praised the working of panchayats. 8.7. Land Revenue Administration. Akbar provided an excellent system of land revenue administration. In this task, he received immense help from experts like Muzaffar Khan, Itmad Khan and Todarmal. Sher Shah and Akbar had won over the hearts of Indian peasantry primarily on this account. Sher Shah Sur was the forerunner of Akbar in the field of land revenue system. Akbar adopted his reforms with suitable modifications and perfected the land revenue system through experimentation. Akbar, after assuming the reins of government in his own hands in 1560, decided to introduce reforms in the land revenue system. In order to introduce changes, many experiments were conducted in the land revenue system. 8.7.1. First experiment. Akbar appointed Atimad Khan as his Imperial Diwan in 1563. Then he was entrusted with the working of introducing the land revenue reforms in the crown lands, which then comprised the province of Agra and Delhi and a part of the province of Lahore also. Aitmad Khan divided the entire cultivable territory of the crown lands into 18 uniform parganas with the intention of collecting land revenue from each pargana about a crore of dams, that is 2.5 lakhs of rupees. He made many attempts to bring changes on the line of Sher Shah's land revenue system, but he was not successful. 8.7.2. Second experiment. In 1564, Akbar appointed Muzaffar Khan, a renowned financier, as his Diwan, and Raja Todarmal was appointed as his assistant. He discovered 2 important defects in the existing land revenue system. First, the preparation of rent rolls or state demand by proxy by the government officials without actually measuring the land under cultivation. Second, the defective method of demand in cash based on hypothetical schedule of prices. Muzaffar Khan rectified the second defect to some extent, but his attempt to introduce a systematic survey of the cultivable land failed because of the outbreak of the Uzbek revolt. 8.7.3. Third experiment. In 1569, Shihabuddin Ahmad was appointed as Imperial Diwan. He introduced Nusk or Kankut system in the preparation of rent rolls. According to this method, a rough estimate of the produce was made by the government officials in association with some elders of the village, while the crops nearly ripened just before harvesting. Page 33. Undoubtedly, it was an improvement over earlier method of assessment. The revenue was collected through the landlords and other middlemen, but it was a time-consuming process which usually delayed the collection of land revenue. 8.7.4. Fourth experiment. In 1570-71, Raja Todarmal took the initiative in undertaking the most significant steps towards the reorganization of the land revenue system. Todarmal suggested that Nusk or Kankut to be abolished. Akbar abolished this system. Afterwards, Kunangus were ordered to undertake actual measurement of all the cultivable land within the areas under their jurisdiction. Actual proper per bhiga of each crop from different qualities of land was prepared by them at the Pargana or Tehsil level. The revenue to be collected was fixed on the basis of these calculations. In 1573, Todarmal was sent as Diwan to Gujarat to set right its final system. There, Todarmal ordered a complete survey of the entire cultivable land of the province. A uniform method for its measurement was adopted. The cultivable land held by various peasant proprietors was determined. The classification of land was also made on the basis of its fertility. It was the first time that a systematic measurement was made as a preliminary step towards the assessment or settlement of land revenue. Bandabast. Akbar was very much pleased. Afterwards, he immediately ordered the entire cultivable land of the empire, including that of Jagirs, to be surveyed systematically. 8.7.5. Fifth and the last experiment. Raja Todarmal was appointed as Imperial Diwan in 1582. Todarmal implemented his system in the whole empire. The state demand was determined in kind, but its conversion into cash posed a serious problem because of fluctuations in the prices of corns from place to place and from time to time. Therefore, in order to settle the land revenue, new rates for conversion were to be applied. Todarmal devised a method to overcome this problem. On his recommendation, Akbar promulgated what is variously known as the Zabti system, the Ain-e-Dashila or the Bandobast Arzi. This has been generally described as the land revenue settlement of Raja Todarmal. 8.7.6. Raja Todarmal's land revenue system or the Zabti system. The new revenue settlement was called Zabti system and it was introduced in 1582 AD. It was also known as the Rayatwari system because it dealt with cultivators directly. It may be recorded at this juncture itself that later on the East India Company also adopted this system with certain changes. Page 34. The land revenue settlement of Todarmal involved five stages in the permanency settlement. These stages were the measurement of land, its classification, assessment of state's demand in kind, conversion of state's demand in cash, and finally mode of collection of the land revenue. Measurement of land. The survey or paimaish of the entire land under cultivation was carefully done. For this purpose, a uniform method for the assessment of land was adopted. The village was taken as a standard administrative unit. Exact territorial boundaries were demarcated and the total area of land in each village was calculated. Then the exact area of cultivable land held by each peasant proprietor was determined. The land was surveyed according to a uniform system of measurement based on Sikandar Lodi's gaz or yard measuring 41 digits in length. Sher Shah's gaz of 32 digits was discarded. Previously measure called Zarib made hempen robes which expanded when wet but contracted when dried. The new one introduced by Akbar was made of bamboo poles linked together with iron links. The tanab or chain was 60 gas and the biga or unit of superficial measure was 60 gas square or 3600 square gas. The total area of cultivable land in the possession of each village, each paragana, each district and each province and finally of the whole empire was ascertained. Classification of land. After the measurement of land, the land was classified into four categories on the basis of quality or fertility of the soil. These four categories were the Pulaj, Parauti, Chachar and Banjar. 1. The Pulaj land was one in which two crops were raised every year. It was not allowed to lie fallow. 2. Parauti land had to be left fallow after raising two crops for 1 year so that it might recover its fertility. 3. Chachar land had to be cultivated for 3 or 4 years and Banjar had to be left fallow for 5 years or more. Each of the above mentioned categories of land was subdivided into three grades, namely good, middle and bad on the basis of its fertility, so that cultivators were not subjected to any injustice. Thus the entire cultivable land of a village, excluding the Banjar, was divided into as many as 9 categories for the purpose of determining the land revenue. Assessment of land revenue. On the basis of past 10 years produce, the average yield per biga of each kind of land in respect of every crop was ascertained separately. It was calculated on the basis of the past 10 years produce. Page 35. To begin with, detailed schedules were prepared on the basis of the information available from the years 1570-71 to 1580-81. Having ascertained the average product, it was necessary to fix the state demand. 1/3 of the average produce per biga of land in respect of various crops from the various categories of land was fixed as the state demand. This land revenue was made payable in kind by the cultivator during the next 10 years. This has to be revised every 10 years only. Conversion into cash. After fixing the land revenue in kind, it was to be converted into cash. In order to calculate this, the empire was divided into a large number of regions called dastur. In each dastur, average price per mound for each crop was prepared by taking into account the prices which prevailed during the preceding 10 years. Generally, a dastur included a number of tehsils or parganas, various systems of revenue. Todalmer's revenue settlement was called as the Zapti system. It prevailed in the Subhas of Bihar, Allahabad, Multan, Aund, Agra, Malwa, Delhi, Lahore and in certain parts of Ajmer and Gujarat. Besides, there were other systems of assessment prevailing in the empire. These were the Gallabaksha, which was the old Indian system of assessment by crop division. It prevailed in Thatta and parts of the Subhas of Kabul and Kashmir. The Nasik was a rightwari rather than a zamindari and arrangement. In this system, there was no intermediary between the riot and the state. Officers of Revenue Department. The bulk of state income was derived from the land revenue and therefore Akbar paid greater attention to employing social officials for the collection of the revenue. He did away the practice of collecting land revenue through the highest bidders. At the top of the revenue administration stood Diwan-e-Ala. This office was occupied by Todalmer. He directed the whole land revenue policy and exercised supervision over the revenue officials at the Sarkar and Pargana level. As described earlier, Amalguzar was the officer in charge of the revenue establishment at the district level, while his counterpart at the Tehsil level was called the Amil. But the person who directly concerned with the collection of the revenue was Amil at the Pargana level. He was assisted in his jurisdictions by officers such as Bitikchi, the Fotidar, the Konango, the Patwari and the Mukadams. Each cultivator received a patta or title deed and had to sign a Kabuliyat or deed of agreement according to which he had to pay the state demand. The patta was a legal document of great significance. It contained minute details of the land held by the peasant. The document was passed on in heritage from generation to generation. The land revenue was payable in kind or cash twice a year, that is, after the harvesting of Rabi and Kharif crops. Page 36. The officials were strictly warned not to collect in excess of state demand. In times of drought or famine, advances were made to the cultivators. Remissions were also made. The cultivators were fairly compensated for the damage done to their crops during the march of the armies. The patwari was to give a detailed receipt stating the amount of rent and the area of land cultivated and the name of the village to which the cultivator belonged. Thus, Akbar established a highly efficient land revenue system. The peasants were happy with the introduction of new revenue settlement. The state demand being fixed, there was hardly any scope for extracting more from the peasants. The officials were by and large efficient. The officers, if found guilty of exploitation of peasants, were punished severely. The officials were instructed to be lenient and considerate to the peasants. Thus, peasants were happy during the reign of Akbar. On the basis of contemporary evidences, we can say that the land revenue system was highly efficient and the peasants were very happy. 8.8. The Imperial Army. Akbar organized the army systematically. It was mainly consisted of infantry, artillery and cavalry and elephants corps. 8.8.1. Infantry. Akbar did not attach much importance to infantry. It mainly consisted of multitude of men assembled together. Infantry mainly included foot soldiers consisting bandukchis, that is riflemen, and shamshirbaz, that is swordsmen. They also used bows and arrows, javelins, etc. Besides the soldiers, water carriers, slaves, and others were also included in them. Darbans, that is porters employed to guard the palace, pehelwans, that is wrestlers, kahars, or palki bearers. 8.8.2. Cavalry. Cavalry was the most important branch of Akbar's army. It was mainly drawn from the mansabdars and the ahadis. Every mansabdar maintained his own army. There were also ahadi soldiers. These were the soldiers of the emperor. They were looked after by the diwan and the bakshi. They were recruited, trained and maintained on behalf of the emperor. The Ahadis were better paid than common soldiers and sometimes they drew as much as ₹500 per month. The number was not fixed. During the reign of Akbar, they numbered 12,000. They were the soldiers of the emperor and their loyalty was to him alone. Page 37. These were the soldiers who were recruited on behalf of the emperor, but they were placed under or were handed over to mansabdars. 8.8.3. Elephant corps. Akbar had kept a very large number of war elephants. The elephant corps was arranged in groups of 10, 20 or 30. The grands looked after these elephants. The elephants were used for fighting as well as to carry the load. The mansabdars were also required to maintain a certain number of elephants. 8.8.4. Artillery. Akbar further strengthened the artillery which was introduced in India by Babur. Humayun also used artillery while fighting against his enemies. The artillery was called by the name of Topkhana. Akbar effected an improvement in the guns. He made these guns as light as possible. Detachable guns were manufactured which could be broken into parts which could be easily carried from place to place. This made an extensive use of artillery in battles. The Mughals were not themselves much advanced in artillery. They depended upon the help of the Rumis, that is Muhammadans from Constantinople, or Farangis, mostly sailor refugees from Surat. The artillery was placed under the care of an officer known as Mir Atash or Daroga-e-Topkhana, who was a mansabdar of 5,000. He was responsible for all new appointments and promotions. He maintained descriptive roles of all artillery recruits. 8.8.5. Mansabdari system. The important feature of the organization of the Mughals was the Mansabdari system. Akbar introduced this system with the help of Mir Bakshi Shahbaz Khan in 1571. Mansabdari system continued with minor changes up to the reign of Aurangzeb. The system was not the innovation of Akbar. He borrowed it from the system introduced by Khalifa Abbasid. It was accepted by Genghis Khan and Timur also. Literally, the term mansab means rank. Different numbers which could be divided by 10 were used for ranking officers. It was also meant for fixing the salaries and allowances of officers. It aimed at fixing a particular person at a particular place on the basis of his officers, soldiers, his status and salary, etc. The mansabdars were not purely military officials. They also performed revenue and other civil duties. There is no unanimity among scholars regarding the number of grades of mansabdars. Abul Fazl says that there were 66 grades of Mansabdars, but in actual practice, not more than 33 grades operated. According to him, the lowest grade consisted of 20, while the highest grade consisted of 10,000. Page 38. But according to Badoni, during the later years of Akbar's reign, it even touched 12,000. Under his successors, it rose further. Jahangir and Shah Jahan awarded mansabs up to the number only 8,000, while royal princes were given mansabs up to the number of 40,000. Some historians have described that the mansabdars were required to maintain soldiers equivalent to the number of rank awarded to them. But many historians do not accept this. It is concluded that the number of soldiers of mansabdars were certainly less than the number of their ranks. The recruitment and promotion of mansabdars was in the hands of the emperor, who could also dismiss them at will. Generally, the recruitment of the mansabdars was made on the recommendations of a mansabdar to the Mir Bakshi. He took the person to the emperor and presented him. If the emperor was convinced, then he was granted a mansab. A complete record of each mansabdar was maintained, and promotions were made on the basis of this record, known as Hifkat. There was also no fixed rules regarding the appointment and promotion of mansabdars. Generally, the promotions were granted to the mansabdars on the eve of a fresh expedition or on a successful conclusion of an expedition. The duties of mansabdar were in no way connected with the number of his rank. It was not required that an officer enjoying a higher mansab should also enjoy a higher post in the state. It has to be made clear that Raja Man Singh enjoyed higher mansab than Abul Fazl under Akbar, but Abul Fazl was a minister while Raja Man Singh was not. It was the emperor who decided the rules of mansabdar. There were two methods of making payments to the nobles. One was giving them jagirs wherefrom they got their salaries. The second method was that of cash payment. In this case, the mansabdar got his salary from the royal treasury. The right of collecting revenue from their jagirs was that of the officers of the central government. The revenue which was collected from jagirs was handed over to the concerned mansabdar. It was deducted from their salaries. The mansabs were paid very handsome salaries. No doubt mansabdars were expected to spend the necessary money for the maintenance of soldiers and discharge of other obligations out of this amount, but they still were left with sufficient amount. The office of the mansabdar was not hereditary. On the death of a mansabdar, all his property was confiscated by the emperor. Probably pension was given to the widow of the deceased mansabdar. According to Manuki, the king seized everything left by his generals, officers and other officials at their death, and only a trifle was given to their widows for their livelihood. Jat and Sawar. The terms Jat and Sawar were intimately connected with the mansabdari system, but the exact meaning and significance is not known. During the later years of his reign, Akbar introduced the rank of Jat and Sawar in the mansabdari system. Page 39. Every mansabdar was given the rank of Sawar as well as that of Jat, indicated the number of troops which a mansabdar was expected to maintain, while the Sawar indicated the actual number of horses under the command of the mansabdar. But according to Dr. Ishwari Prasad, the Jat was the personal rank of the mansabdar. But to this were added a number of extra horsemen for which an officer was allowed to draw extra allowance, and this was called his Sawar rank. Thus are different interpretations about the meaning of Jat and Sawar. It is difficult to arrive at the conclusion. The mansabdars were divided into three grades. If a mansabdar had equal ranks of Jat and Sawar, he was of the first category. If a mansabdar had the rank of a lower Sawar than the Jat, he belonged to the second category, rank of his half of his Jat rank. If his Sawar were less than half of his Jat or there were no Sawar at all, he belonged to the third category. Akbar started the practice of keeping Hulia of his soldiers and also the practice of branding the horses and elephants. Department called Dagh Mahali was established for purpose of branding horses and elephants. Akbar used to inspect the army of every mansabdar every year, or at least once in 3 years. The mansabdari system suffered from many defects. The mansabdars cheated the state by preparing false musters. At the time of inspection, produced bogus soldiers and personal ponies as horses to draw the necessary amounts. Akbar tried to check this fraud, but he was also not successful. About the strength of Akbar's army, different opinions have been expressed. On a modest calculation, it is accepted that the army in Akbar's day was much larger than 2,50,000 and that it could have been less than 3 lakhs. Akbar deserved credit for improving the army organization of the Mughals. His Mansabdari system was also successful. The Mughal emperors after him till Aurangzeb succeeded in maintaining status quo but failed to bring out any improvement in it. 8.9. Judicial administration. Akbar was a great lover of justice and laid the foundation of an efficient system of judicial administration. Emperor himself was the head of the judicial administration. He was considered as a fountain of justice. He was always eager to enhance his reputation as the just monarch. His court constituted the highest civil and criminal court of justice, which took up the original as well as appellate cases. He personally heard the disputes. In dispensation of justice, he was assisted by a mullah and pandit who interpreted the personal law of Muslims and Hindus respectively. The right to inflict death punishment rested with the emperor alone. Page 40. Next to the imperial court was the court of Sadrur Sadr and Qazi-ul-Qazat. While the former decided the religious cases, the latter decided all other types of cases. Often, these two officers were assigned to the same person. They also helped the emperor in the appointments of judicial offices in the Sarkars and Parganas. In provinces, Sipah Salar, the Diwan and the Qazi looked after the judicial administration. The Sipah Salar or governor decided all criminal cases and punished thieves, robbers, rebels, etc. The civil cases were decided by the Diwan pertaining to land and property. In addition to these two officials, Qazi court existed. The Qazi was the chief judicial authority of the province. He was assisted in his judicial administration by officials like Mufti and Miradi. He tried both civil and criminal cases of both Hindus and Muslims. At the Sarkar and Pargana level, the judicial powers were entrusted to Kotwal and Qazi. The Faujdar and Amalgazars were also empowered to try certain types of civil and criminal cases. In the Parganas, the Shikdar acted as the chief judicial official and tried all criminal cases. The Amils and other revenue officials decided revenue disputes. At the lowest level, village panchayats enjoyed the sanction of the state to administer justice according to local traditions, customs and the personal law of the populace. The punishments were severe. Mutilation of limbs and physical torture formed an essential part of the capital punishment could not be inflicted by any judicial authority of the state without the approval of the emperor. But it has been pointed out that the weakest point in Akbar's administration was judicial administration. The judicial administration provided by Akbar was quite rudimentary and suffered from numerous serious defects. 8.10. Let us sum up. Akbar introduced an excellent system of administration. To a great extent, his administrative system was based upon Sher Shah's administration, but Akbar introduced many changes. Akbar enjoyed absolute authority. His ministers assisted him. In the central government, there were many ministers. The empire for administrative purpose was divided into many provinces called Subas. It was under the direct control of the central government. Subedar was the head of the Subha. There were many officers in each Subha to assist the Subedar. Each Subha was divided into many Sarkars or districts. Each Sarkar was under the control of a Shikdar. In each Sarkar also there were many officers to assist him in the administration. Page 41. Each Sarkar was further divided into Parganas or Tehsils. There were many villages in each Pargana. Village was the lowest unit of administration. Akbar introduced revolutionary changes in the revenue administration. He conducted many experiments before Raja Todarmal came out with a solution. It was he who remedied all the defects in the revenue system and introduced what is known as the Zapti system or the Hasal. It is popularly known as Todarmal's revenue system. Akbar introduced reforms in army organization also. Especially artillery was further strengthened under Akbar. Another important reform in the army organization was the introduction of Mansabdari system by Akbar. Similarly, many reforms were also introduced in the judicial administration. 8.11. Self-assessment questions. 1. Describe the main features of Akbar's administration. 2. Give an account of provincial administration under Akbar. 3. Critically examine the land revenue system introduced by Akbar. 4. Discuss the merits and demerits of the Mansabdari system introduced by Akbar. 8.12. Books for further study. Ishwari Prasad, A Short History of the Muslim Rule in India. J. L. Mehta, Advanced Study in the History of Medieval India. Satish Chandra, Medieval India from Sultan to the Mughals. And S. C. Rai Chaudhary, History of Medieval India. With that, we have come to the end of Unit 8. This unit was written by Professor Shivanna.
Page 42, Notes.